when the last time I parted.
Oop, sorry about that. It's just now catching.
Believe
up.
That or not, believe it or not, Dave, that's his testicles. That's why it happened twice.
No, I don't care if the sun don't shine. I get my kicks in the evening time when I listen to the Werepig. It's no fun with the sun around, but I get going when the sun goes down and I listen to the Werepig. That's when he talks and talks and talks, and then he talks some more. Don't ask me just how long he talks at a time like this. Who keeps score? So I don't care if the sun don't shine. I get my kicks in the evening time when I listen to the funky Werepig.
Oh, we're entering the no pants zone. We are in the final run here. I feel like one of those guys from, what was it, Chariots of Fire? Chariots of the Gods? One of those. I can't remember that really boring English movie about the long distance runners. But I'm seeing the tape, man. I am seeing the tape. We are two shows away from finishing up another splendiferous year with the Funky Werepig here in the No Pants Zone of the TMV Cafe every Friday night party night. I got tonight's show. Then I got next week's show, which is our big finale, our big Christmas holiday special and everything. And by the way, let me say to everyone out there, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and to our politically correct friends, December. I want to make sure I got everyone covered. So, I'm geeked. I'm geeked. I go into my Werepig hibernation for a couple weeks, and then EW comes in and basically tasers my ass and goes, back to work! And then I kick into the new year. But that 2-3 weeks that I'm off, man, I'll be thinking about you guys, but I'm still here now. We got things to do. We got business to take care of. Any birthdays? Any anniversary? I can't even finish this. The word anniversary, because I know that there are birthdays. This has been a busy week. December is such a cool month, and I'll tell you why. A lot of the coolest people in the world are born in December. So like every freaking week, it's just like a who's who of birthday people. My sister. My little sister, Trish the Dish, it's her birthday tonight, this very night. Don't think I'm still not going to get pissed off that she's not listening to the show. She's out at the bar, just living it up, getting schnockered. I think she should take the hour off and still listen to her big brother on the radio. But happy birthday to my little sis, man. That's very cool. It's very cool that she'll never catch me. She'll never, ever catch me with birthdays. But like this past week, one of my best buddies in the whole world, Louise Bomer, Tug, my buddy Tug, it was her birthday earlier on. And a massive friend of the show, Mr. Harry Shannon, was hatched many, many, many moons ago earlier this week. So good week for peoples in with the birthdays. So happy birthday to you all. I'm going to light an underwear scented candle for each and every one of you. The whole place is going to smell like cottony freshness. Spank my chi. I'm so happy. Tonight's sponsor. Let's get to the mailbox. That's the other thing I like about December is I start getting like little Christmas presents and stuff. And, already I've gotten books from, my buddy Kevin Millar. He sent me, a book I've been reading, and then William Pauley III. That's a guy that you should check out and read too. That guy's. I'll have to get him on the show when we come back. He's a cool dude. And then I mentioned Jay Brandt, artist from Heads Up Studios. He sent me his art collection book, and then a whole bunch of decals. So it's like ironing. Take out the hat, ironing a with the decal. I got it on the back of my pants. Not pants like you're thinking, because I don't wear pants. I'm talking, I didn't want to say undies because it makes me sound effeminate. It makes it sound like they have frills, and you can't put a decal on frilly underwear. I got man drawers. That's the way I'll put it. Man drawers. So I got a Batman decal on the back of my man drawers. Pretty proud of it. Maybe I'll post a picture on FaceSpace. But I did want to mention, and I'm not sure how we do this. I know when, like, Letterman has a guest or wants to do a promo, but they're not with CBS, his station. He's got to say, as seen on another network. So I'll have to just try to say that. But I wanted to give a shout out and some love to a couple of buddies of mine, Terry Todd and Jimmy Haunted. They're going to be doing, they do the radio shows too on another network. But they're going to be doing, starting next Friday night, I think, at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, they're going to start with a new show called The Haunted Chronicles, which sounds like a really cool, freaky deaky show. And it's 8 o'clock on Fridays. So if you match it up, you could technically listen to their show on another network, which is, I'm not going to say paramaniaradio.com because that would be wrong, but they're on this other network that they're on. Then you come over and listen to the Funky Werepig, and then you stick around for Paranormal, our scary-ass show that we got here, and you got a whole freaky-deaky night. And then, of course, then it gets into NinaCon. That's later on. Nothing gets freakier than that. But wanted to give a shout out to Terry Todd and Jimmy Haunted. Haunted Chronicles, look it up. Should be pretty fun. So other than that, and I got to do the normal whoring with our buddies over at Magic Farmers Incorporated. If you have not hooked up with these guys yet, please do so. They're on the YouTube. They make these funny ass videos on the YouTube. This past one is rather controversial. I thought it was kind of funny. Christian Tingle. It's a dating site. Not like Christian Mingle. Christian Mingle is where you go to find a husband or a wife. Christian Tingle, I think, is when you just want like a church-sanctioned booty call. So I'm not sure if it's real or not. I haven't checked the actual dating site yet. But Christian Tingle was an advertisement they just ran. Magic Farmers Incorporated. You can find them on Facebook, but the best thing is subscribe to them on YouTube. They'll send the videos right to your door free of charge every Monday morning. Get you a little laugh. So that's enough of me blathering. I'm sick of me blathering. Are you? I am. Let's turn it over. You know, I'm going to bring on my guest. Let's just bring on my guest because he's not. I'm not even going to say he's a guest. He's more like a tax deduction. Of the 50 shows I've done this year, he's been on 10 of them. So he's a guest that, like I said, he sleeps on my couch. That's how often he's on this show, and I love it because I love him. He's an awesome dude. He's an incredible writer. You guys probably know him from his Empire series. I don't know if two can be a series. We're going to call it a series. We're going to give him the credit for it. But Empire, he's written The Harvest Cycle. He wrote last year. He's had Unbound and other tales. And you know my favorite from his, Dark and Titties. That's an awesome one. He's had his stories appear in Permuted Press and The Hacker Source, Library of the Living Dead, Necrotic Tissue, and Brony Weekly, all things about My Little Pony. So he gets around. Let's bring him on. You guys know him as The Dunwoody. We're so close, I get to just call him The. So let's bring him on. David Dunwoody, folks.
Tax deduction. So what I'm inferring is that I'm a charity. Is that what
you're telling me? No.
Nah, can't go back.
You caught me. No, that's what my mom used to call all my friends that would come over when I was a teenager. They'd come over like every freaking night and spend the weekend at my house. And they'd drink all my dad's beer and, you know, they'd eat up all the food in the fridge. So she used to just say, you know, are your tax deductions coming over this weekend?
Okay. So now it sounds like a term of endearment. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, what else would it be? You food snitch. How goes it, though?
Good. It's good. I didn't think we were going to be here 2013, and here we are.
So. Were you hooked up on the Mayan thing?
Oh, I was so into it. I figured if it turned out that that's not really what they said, at least some crazy people would get a nuke or something.
That's true.
So I didn't buy anybody shit for Christmas last year.
Want to disappoint. Now, are you serious though? Were you obsessed with it? Were you paying attention to it? Did you do a countdown?
I was obsessed with the obsession that so many people were so deeply into it and yet had never taken 5 minutes to like look up the Mayans and see that they never said that. That people, you know, it's just like people are just like selling off all their stuff and taking all their money out of the bank, stuffing it in a mattress and riding that thing down a snow hill. And it's like, you should at least.
Because you can't ride, you can't go, you can't take your mattress down a snowy hill unless you stuffed your cash in it. Everybody knows that.
Believe me.
So it's, that's funny, man. No, because my son, my oldest boy, was wigging out about it.
Yeah.
He was, but he was, I got to give him credit. He was wigging out, he was wigging out on it like maybe 4 or 5 years before 2012. And I don't own a calendar. I'm not good with math. So I don't know what year that would be. But it was like a good 4 or 5 years before 2012. And he would start mentioning it to me. He would go, this really sucks. I'll graduate high school and then it's over.
Wasn't that true for all of us?
Yeah. I'm like, well, yeah, get used to it, pal. Exactly. Get used to, we're out of the mouth of babes. But no, he was like really panicking about it. He was really upset. And you know, and you have to explain, I had to explain to him two facts. Number one, they don't measure time the way we do. It's not in a straight line. It's in a circle. So you just go to the next cycle.
Right.
You know, so it is the end of that calendar, but the new one begins the very next day, you know. And then I told him my theory that I had for a long time. It's a Mayan calendar. If anything happens, the Mayans will drop dead. You know, it's their damn calendar. So
it's true.
But he was – I'll have to put it up on FaceSpace or something. I actually have a picture of him in front of a giant Mayan calendar that I just took this summer. And he's pointing at the calendar laughing his ass off because he got it wrong. So, but right. Are you into that stuff? Do you, because you do all kinds of research and you're always writing apocalyptic things.
Yeah.
You know, that seems to be a fun trend of yours. You seem somewhat of an expert. If it's not zombies killing everything, you got zombies plus robots plus crazy ass zombie clowns and.
Sure.
You know, do you sit back and study all the different ways the world could end?
I definitely have. I think it's, I mean, we've always been obsessed with that. You know, like every generation thinks we're the last decent generation and the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And it turns out people have been thinking that as long as they could think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cavemen were watching their kids bonk each other out of the heads and saying, oh, hell, well, it's over for us.
We'll never make it.
Yeah, I mean, we're obsessed not only with, you know, each of us as individuals, our own death, but just like everything dying. Everyone has to die.
I've come to the conclusion that, you know, when it comes to it, and you see all these specials all the time, and I'm a sucker for them. You know, is it going to be the giant asteroid? Is it going to be a plague? Is it going to be Jesus Christ coming back, you know, and dropping the hammer? I don't think about how the world's going to end. The more I go out in the public, especially when I have to drive on the roads, I'm more obsessed with how do people make it to the next day. You know, sure. I watch people just walking through a mall, and I'm like, how did you make it to today? There's no way you should have made it here today. That's what I think is going to be extinction. Just did you ever see the movie Idiocracy?
Yeah.
That's it, baby.
That's it.
That's what's going to happen. I mean, I'm not worried about extinction. Hell, I'm fascinated we've made it this far.
Well, you know, I think you may be absolutely right. I mean, look at we've kind of phased out natural selection from humans. It's now just survival of whoever has the most stuff and whoever can afford, you know, top of the line medical care so they can live to be 100 while they're, you know, they and their mistresses are popping out more little sociopathic gremlins. And they're the ones that are, you know, slowly but surely kind of outnumbering us. Here I go talking about how we're the last decent generation. But we are. I happen to be right.
Preach it. Preach it, Father Dunwoody. Right. I'm with you.
So, yeah, I mean, we're definitely, I think, more and more dumb sociopathic people are really thriving. And if, whereas, you know, if we were fish or something, they would have been shark bait in 2 seconds.
We are amazing at that. We are amazing. The dumber we get, the better we survive.
That's true.
That's awesome. Dude, you've got to put this in one of your next upcoming books. No one's written an apocalypse about stupid people.
I definitely do have stupid people in all of my stories, but they've never been the cause, not directly. That would be true.
That's true. Well, what? How did you popping out little sociopaths? What was your phrase? Because that would have been a great title for the book.
Popping out little sociopathic gremlins.
That's it.
Yes.
See, I'd buy that book. I don't even need to see cover art. Just that title. So, but you kind of took a little time off, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I was last year. I was kind of under the weather. I took a mental health. I don't know. What do you call a period of like 7 months? Whatever that is.
A little over half a year. That's yeah, what we
a little,
call it.
A little break, and regrouped, and boy, it really it does you good. So long as you're not just, you know, staring at the ceiling, you go and, you know, you go talk to your old therapist and you explore some stuff and you figure out some stuff and then you come back, you know, better than ever.
It's kind of like a mental colon cleansing.
A little bit, especially, you know, that's why they call me shit for brains. That's it.
That's it. That's it. You don't even need the name tag. It's No, but I mean, I think everybody needs that, man. I think you know, I used to call them brain massages. You know, even if it was just like every Thanksgiving, I head out to my in-laws, and they live out in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because there's like very little technology out where they live. So, you know, and I'm not a cell phone person. I'm not a big computer person. So I don't bring any of that stuff with me. I don't check any emails, no websites, nothing for, you know, like a better part of a week. And it's nice. It's, you know, just even though it's a small, you know, just a few days, you know, it just shakes out the lint trap.
Sure. Yeah, you know, we spend so much time on social media, and you feel like, because you're just, well, in my case, just posting about myself all day. And so I feel like, you know, I'm really in touch with myself. But then when you disconnect and you're kind of off the grid for a little bit, you realize just how, you know, you were just so sort of circling the orbit around yourself. You need to really get in there and spend some time inside your head.
When you took time off, were you still writing, or did you just take a break from the whole thing? Like, you know what, I gotta, you know, I've cranked out a few novels, and you know, I don't know of many people that put out continual short stories like you do. Did you just put it on the shelf and you say, I'm not touching any of this shit for a while?
Well, the main reason that I got offline is because I was having some OCD issues, and my mind, when I got like that, I was afraid to get on the computer because I was afraid of messing something up, you know, like crashing my computer, losing everything, burning down my apartment. You know, I mean, it's a reasonable concern, but
sure.
I got off the computer altogether, and so I wasn't writing because, you know, because of my eyes, I can no longer write longhand. So I was just kind of sitting there going stir crazy. And then I actually took up some watercolors, decided to start painting, you know, just to, as some sort of outlet.
Oh, you did? Cool. Okay.
And that proved to be just fantastic. I mean, not only was that sort of creative outlet I needed, but it did end up giving me ideas for stories so that when I returned to the land of the living, I was able to crank out some new stories in pretty quick order.
That's nice, because yeah, I know a lot of people who do that. You know, they'll take some time out, and you know, you got to have some kind of creative outlet. So some people will go paint like you did, or I know peeps who you know, they might take a break and go act in a play or do music. Scott McCoy, for instance, you know Scott McCoy, right, from Necrotic Tissue?
Yeah,
yeah. He took most of 2013 off, I think, to work on his new CD, "Songs to Cry to While You Masturbate." I can't wait to hear that album. It's gonna be a good one.
Oh, finally.
So yeah, it's a lot of research he told me he was doing for that one. Songs to cry to while masturbating. That's horrible. Who writes this stuff?
Don't look at me.
Are you going to keep up with the painting, though, or is that just like your outlet during your break?
I do still do it a little bit. I've gotten down to like online, or not online, but digital, like Photoshop art. And, you know, it's, again, this isn't something I'm pursuing in a serious way, but it's just, and that's one of the things that's so great about it, is that it's just something that's, you know, for fun, just for me. And so it's really nice in that way.
I'm that way with charts. I'm not looking to be a professional. I'm not in any competition kind of thing. I just like throwing them around. You know, the neighbors hate me. Sorry about your cat. But no, I dig jarts. Good release.
Nice.
So the so all right, so you took some time off. You know, you rebooted a bit. And for those who don't know, though you've been pretty public about it, which I admire you for, and I know people like my son definitely look up to you about it, because of your background being autistic. Mm. You know, you I guess sometimes just need to get away from things, huh?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think it becomes sort of a chicken egg thing. I don't know which exacerbated the other more, the Asperger's or the OCD, but there was definitely a really strong connection there. You know, one of the things I find is that with my autism, I'm very drawn towards like systems and patterns and things.
Yep.
And then when you develop OCD and you're trying to create systems to keep your, just to get through the day, they kind of start feeding off each other. So yeah, I mean that made 2012 a tough year, but at the same time, going and you know, talking to people and figuring some stuff out, it gave me I think greater insight into not just the OCD but the autism as well.
Yeah, with my son he's done incredibly well. Very, very proud of him. He's come a long way. He's actually in college now. He's kicking ass in college. And they, you know, I've told the stories before that the experts were saying, you know, might as well train him to push a broom at McDonald's because that's all I'll ever do.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's kicking ass and everything. But one of the things I noticed with him a lot and some of the other, I'm very active with in the autism awareness field. One of the other things I noticed with a lot of the autistic people I work with is they, a lot of people develop, I guess you like new tics or whatever, you know, for example, like my son, he used to do the thing with the flapping the hands and the rocking back and forth when he was younger.
Yeah.
You know, and then he progresses past that. Now he's got, you know, then he gets a different tic and a different tic. And, he was going through a period recently where he kind of became like agoraphobic all of a sudden. For like a better part of a year, he hated even leaving the house, and he just got overwhelmed with it. And you know, now he's like past that, and he's fine. You know, it's just, do you find yourself like that? Like new things shuffle in and out, and
oh, sure, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, my thing was I never had like the, as far as I know, with like the hand flapping. My thing was, and even back then, in hindsight, this was sort of OCD beginning to take root. I was always pulling up my socks and clearing my throat. And like, I had to do it, especially if I was nervous. I had to do it a certain way. My mom said she always knew where I was because she could hear me on the other side of the house. And then, you know, it's like for all of the things about being autistic, which can be really positive and cool if you're in the right environment and you can channel them the right way, you know, there are still always those limitations that, you know, you're always a square peg and it's always manifesting in one way or another. And I do find that it can sometimes, the tics can change from one thing to another.
Yeah. I got to tell you though, it's, and I have to mention this only because it you deserve this. One of the times I got to party with you, we hooked up at one of the conventions, I think in Pittsburgh or something. and we got to party a little bit. I brought my son with me because he wanted to meet you because he was very excited and you're someone he looks up to. Because, you know, after being told by so many people that he wasn't going to do anything and autistic people can't do anything, and then finding out that there's this autistic dude out there who's writing these kick-ass books, you know. And we go to the bookstore. You know, whenever we go to a bookstore, he goes up and finds your books. And he pulls them out and goes, here's the Dunwoody, you know.
That's awesome.
And he just thinks it's so cool that, you know, he's autistic, you're autistic, and you know. And in fact, I'll embarrass you. In college this past semester, he had to write a paper about something personal. So he wrote about being autistic and said that they had to, you know, eventually write, you know, where you want to go with this or whatever. And he said, one day I would like to kind of become a writer, and I know it can be done because a friend of mine, David Dunwoody, has done it and done it successfully. So he actually called you out in a college paper.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's he spelled David Dunwoody. Actually, it looked like he spelled it a lot like it looked like it said Stephen King. but I know he meant you. I'm pretty sure he meant you.
This was, I'm assuming this was like a handwritten paper. You just it was hard to tell.
Yeah, this was. Yeah, he's got horrible handwriting.
Yeah, me too.
It's but no, it was a you know, whole typewritten, really nice, whatever. But no, he still talks about that. In fact, when I told him you were going to be on tonight, he's like, awesome. It's I think I sent you a picture of it once in the Wear Pig Studios. I don't grace the walls. I mean, I've got all kinds of trinkets and toys and everything. There's only one picture on the walls over my desk at my Wear Pig Studios.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it right now, and it is the classic Dunwoody picture in a frame that says, so the other day I was working on my novel.
My mom, the bookshelf where she keeps my books, she's got that same picture frame sitting on top of it.
I'm looking at it right now. It's right above the Wear Pig desk. just cracks me up, man. You're an inspiration, see?
Very cool.
Even when you're snooty.
Yes.
So, hey, not to dwell on the autism thing all night because we got a lot to cover.
No, that's fine.
For people who really don't know what it's about, and like I said, I do a lot of work with autism awareness because I think that's half the battle. I think people, you know, treat people with disabilities like they got herpes or something because they don't freaking know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many people have walked up to my son and just gone, you know, well, is it contagious? Oh, yeah. You better hope he doesn't sneeze. You know, what would you say is the biggest thing that people get wrong about autism? The biggest misperception?
Probably that, that people who are autistic can't do anything except for like figure out some unsolvable giant math problem. You know, that's the perception.
Yeah, unless you take them to Vegas, they're no good.
Right. They sit in a room with a drool cup and then you turn around and they built the Eiffel Tower out of playing cards. That's the thing.
Not that you can't do that. I've seen you do that. You're very good with that.
Well, but.
Yeah. It was more of a Romulan battleship, but I still thought, well, he was trying for the Eiffel Tower. He did okay. But yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's and we actually have had some people that think it's like kind of contagious. Like, yeah. You know, can you, it's like, oh yeah. Oh no, I caught the autism.
The other thing I found is that with Asperger's in particular, if you happen to be on the high functioning end of the spectrum, people, because they have this perception of autism as always being more severe and more limiting, they meet you and then they're like, oh, you're not really autistic, you're just kind of a dick.
That's right.
Yeah,
you don't even look like Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
That may be the quote of the year.
True story.
Oh, that's funny. That's damn funny, dude. So it's I used to fuck with my son's board every year when he was in grade school. Because you didn't find out until later in life, right? You were already out of school and everything, right?
Yeah, I was in my 20s.
Yeah, so in a way, that must have been kind of weird, though. I mean, to finally, I mean, did you know that something was up or there was a curveball for a while and you just didn't have a name for it? Or how did that work out?
I definitely always knew there was something. My parents always knew. But, I mean, back then, Asperger's, it wasn't even in the DSM when I first started.
Right. You know,
I mean, as soon as I started like becoming socialized, when I started preschool is when things started showing up. And at first, my teachers thought I had ADD. My parents thought that, and oh, poor souls, they thought I was just so smart that I couldn't relate to other kids. And then eventually, I go and see this counselor, and he talks to me after two sessions. He goes, "You know what? I think you have Asperger's." And he's like, "My son has Asperger's." I'm like, "Oh God, he thinks I'm like his dead kid or something." But then my mom went and bought all these books, and she starts reading me like these checklists of these are signs of Asperger's, and it was like every single thing, and it was all of a sudden I felt like, oh my God, I know who I am now.
So it was a relief then. It wasn't like this burden, like, oh shit, I'm in the autism spectrum. It was more like a, oh cool, I know what the hell it is now.
Yeah, now I can put a name to it. I don't feel so alone. Yeah.
That is awesome. That's yeah. My son was, we were lucky enough that we found it very early on and were able to figure it out. So by the time he was in school, you know, we could stream him in different directions. But we used to have to go in front of this freaking school board every year in order to get his aid, you know, his financial aid and his helper and all that kind of stuff. You had to reapply every freaking year as if his autism would go away over the summer. You know, we'd have to like go back and argue again. He's still autistic. He still needs this. So, and I remember, and they used to hate my guts. I'm sitting there at a board meeting once, hand to God, sitting there at a board meeting. I'd been to like, you know, six of these now. I'm sick and tired of it. And they're going through the checklist again. Well, does he still do this? Does he do that? I said, look. He still spins things all the time. Yes. He doesn't make eye contact. Yes. You know, he does the hand flapping. I can handle all that. What I can't handle is the levitation. And there's like this absolute silence. And the one main woman goes, "Levitation?" I said, "Yeah, he'll like float 3-4 feet off the ground and they just start scooting from room to room." I said, "It's really disturbing." Then he has this thing where he blinks his eyes and the channels on the TV turn. I said, "I can't handle that stuff." And one of the guys, and these are all supposed to be experts, one of the guys flips open his notebook and writes something down real quick and then shuts his notebook. And to this day, I'm dying to know what he wrote. Because he either wrote, "Mr. Hall's an asshole," or he wrote, "Levitation, I knew it." So I wanted to find out if this expert still sitting at this day, "I have one witness."
Yeah.
They levitate, you know. So
you'll hear this guy on Coast to Coast AM one of these days. He's like started a whole church based around it.
In my public speaking that I do about autism awareness, people think I'm nuts. Well, not just because of that, but for a lot of reasons. But I actually do believe this, and this is one of the reasons I always try to buddy up to you so much. I believe that autism is the next evolution of humanity. I actually believe that. I believe that as time goes by, normal people will be the minority, because other than you know what the biggest problem with autistic people is, you guys have trouble fitting into the society we created.
Right. Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the, I mean, because you guys, you're smarter than us. You have a higher sensitivity with all your senses. You know, I mean, just you guys are far more emotionally stable than us. I mean, we're all assholes, you know. We are. I mean, it's, you can't go down the highway without wanting to kill three or four people just on your way to 7-Eleven.
You know? Well, hey, I want to do that too.
Yeah, but you're right. You do that as a writer.
Well, that's true.
So, but no, I firmly believe that. I believe that the, we'll find out that you guys are the next higher evolution. So I want you to remember me when you guys take over the Earth. Greg Hall is okay. He was cool to us.
Yeah. I mean, he did. He was the one that made him think we could levitate. And he's responsible for all those airstrikes on us.
Yeah, the drones.
Yeah.
So it's either that or I outed you guys. You know, who's the asshole who told him we could levitate? Thanks. So, dude, with the hey, do you ever put any kind of an autistic type character into your writings?
I've been working on a novel for a few years now that is based around that, and it's something I've been really taking my time with it and been really nitpicky because I don't want it to become something that's kind of like self-serving or narcissistic, although all writing is. But I don't want it. I want the character to evolve into his own guy and you know, not be me. And so I've been taking a lot of time with it, but I'm definitely I'm hoping to get it done probably this next year and shop it around.
What kind of book is it going to be? Is it still going to be in the freaky deaky realms or?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the. I didn't want it to sound like some sort of thinly veiled memoir, so I made sure to introduce like giant insects that eat people and stuff.
Well, that'll. What a giveaway! He's obviously talking about himself. It's with that little nod to them.
Yeah.
So, what's the three egos? I mean, are you writing? I was doing some research, you know, my crack staff. I wasn't doing research. I'm lazy as shit. I got my people to do it for me, but they put up the post-it note, something about the three egos. Is that the movie with Steve Martin and Martin Short? What is that?
That close. So close. But it's, well, it's my next apocalyptic novel that I've just turned in. So I haven't even heard anything back on it. So I don't know when it's going to come out or if I'm going to have to, you know, keep shopping it around. But I can tell you that I am high on this book like nothing else I've ever written. I love all the characters. Yeah, and I mean, this is, it's just, it. There wasn't a bump in the road writing this thing. It just felt so, I don't know, organic, I guess. And it deals with not just the end of the world, but the end of everything. And so it's sort of a genre bender. There's some sci-fi, there's some occult, dark fantasy, you know, some Lovecraftian elements. And maybe that was why I feel it came out so well, because I really allowed myself the freedom of not being bound by any sort of genre boundaries.
What's the I like the tagline, not just the end of the world, the end of everything. Are you including like reality TV and Oprah? And what do you mean the end of everything?
Well, I mean, if I can't say the end of Oprah, I don't want my house to get burned down.
Yeah,
but
right. Speaking of drone strikes.
But yeah, the end of everything. Well, everything real. So reality TV would be safe.
Okay, good. Yeah. There's nothing more scripted than reality TV.
Yeah.
Some of the best writing out there. But so you're talking like just one of these Thanos moves.
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
just, that's you know, that's really... I just infinity gauntleted you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a threat that's basically. It stands to possibly negate just everything that's ever been. So yeah, it does have kind of a comic book sensibility in that sense, and a lot of the characters do have sort of interesting quirks and abilities. So yeah, that's a good comparison.
Awesome. So the three egos, but you're the Dunwoody. I mean, I understand that for you, and correct me if I'm wrong. Because sometimes it happens, not often, but sometimes. I would guess when you say you have to shop it around, you don't get much more than two or three stores before somebody snags you. You know what I mean? When you're shopping around, I mean, I can't picture you being the type of guy that, you know, God, I brought this to like 15 different publishers. I can't get this thing done. You're the Dunwoody. People know who you are. You're a home run hitter. You got to shop to maybe two or three places, and they're fighting each other. They're like, you know, as Anderson Prunty used to say, they're getting in a shovel fight in the middle of a gravel pit over you.
Well, I have had the opportunity since I started, which is, boy, almost 10 years ago. I've had really, really good, long-lasting relationships with publishers like Permuted and Library of the Living Dead when they were putting out new material. And so it was easier back then. I mean, it wasn't a slam dunk, but I knew that I had a good relationship with people who were familiar with the sort of stuff I was writing. Now I feel like I'm kind of getting into new territory. I'm starting to these longer works I'm putting out right now, or that I'm shopping around, I'm sending them out to other publishers. And so I mean, you know, I'm definitely putting myself at greater risk of having to shop it around to 15 or 20 or whatever houses. But, you know, I'm willing to do it because I do. I mean, as arrogant as it sounds, as a writer, you have to believe that you're going to place it, that it's good enough to be placed somewhere. And so you've got to believe that come hell or high water, eventually, even if it's the 39th publisher, they're going to take it. And that's what keeps you going.
No, that's good. And I like the fact that you keep challenging yourself. A lot of people, I think sometimes like to play it safe.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes they keep writing the same thing, or they keep going to that same well over and over again. That's good that you test yourself, dude. And, you know, God, I mean, knowing where you already have been, I can only imagine where you could go from here. I mean, that's, you could get into some major, major territory. You could be one of these guys. That within 2 years they're already making your book into a movie.
God, here's hoping, man. Fingers crossed.
Could you imagine? Well, first off, let me just say this right now, in front of the literally half dozens of people we have listening tonight. Empire should already have been a movie. Why someone isn't jumping on that is just for the fact that they're too ignorant to know that it's there. That Empire is still one of the greatest, most awesomest, coolest, funkinessituted books I have ever read. I love Empire.
Well, thank you. Well, see, this is why I need you to be my agent. I need you to call them up and say whatever you just said, funko-delicious.
Something like that. I think we're recording tonight. I'll go back and listen to it.
All right.
I'll rewind the tape. But I'll have to ask EW, though, because it's that'll be my break. That'll be my break. Like, you took a break, and McCoy with his CD that he's doing. once again, songs to cry to while masturbating. that'll be my break. I'll take a break from everything. And when they say, well, what did you do? Did you paint? I'll say, no, I represented the Dunwoody. I was an agent for a year. So
sweet.
We'll get you out there, man. We'll get you out there. Because that's, yeah. No, Empire. For anybody out there who maybe you've dabbled with some of the Dunwoody's work or whatever, and maybe this is the first time you've ever listened to this show or even heard about David Dunwoody, you must get Empire. This, you know, everyone's doing their zombie novel. Everyone, has their apocalyptic theme or whatever, and I've said this many, many times to you, my friend. I love you and I hate you. The way that you figure out shit, damn you, and your autistic genius or whatever it is you tap into, that says things that everyone should have thought about but no one actually thought about yet. I mean, it's how could no one have thought about who would be the enemy of a zombie? The Grim Reaper. The Grim Reaper would hate zombies because no one's dying, so the Grim Reaper would be pissed off because there goes business. And that should have been done a billion times over. No one's done it until you did it. You think outside the box so again, funkinessitudinous. When I picked up that book and started reading, I was like, son of a bitch, why didn't I think of that? You know, it's like back in my stand-up comedy days when I'd watch a comic and he would crack a joke that was brilliant and I'd hate his guts. I'd go, that was so easy. I should have thought of that. How did I not get to that joke first? The Grim Reaper kicking ass and fighting zombies. That's cool. That is so cool. And with all this zombie stuff that is exploding everywhere in the movies now, how is someone not snagging your book?
I don't know, you know, but maybe, you know, a lot of other sort of outside-the-box zombie novels are getting a lot of traction. Peter Kline's with his great X-Heroes series, which is superheroes versus zombies. As people become more willing to kind of venture outside of the Dawn of the Dead box and play around with the formula, you know, maybe doors will open up for weird stuff like Empire.
And then you just go completely, you just derail the whole train with Harvest Cycle.
Oh, yes. I had to do it.
That one. Yeah, that one kind of reminded me of like when you're playing with a little kid and you're trying to do like, you're sitting with a little kid on the rug and you got your coloring books out or maybe your little action figures. And then you're going, okay, and then the zombies are taking over the world. And he goes, and then a dinosaur comes in. And then a robot. And a robot and a zombie are fighting. And then the dinosaur. And then a knight in shining armor. And a fireman. You know, that's what that book reminded me of. That was so much fun to read.
I can't tell you how close that is to what is actually like inside my brain. That's exactly it. It's like, I love robots. I love aliens, dinosaurs, and all that shit. Why can't it all be one story?
You know. I'm just picturing the Dunwoody laying on his living room rug with all these little action figures. You know, because we all had those action figures when we were growing up, and they were all mixed match sets.
Yeah.
So Batman was 3 times taller than the T-Rex, but it didn't matter. You know, run, Batman, run. So I might do that after the show. I'm not going to lie to you.
You should. Everyone should, because that sort of that magic of being a kid and not second guessing stuff like that. That's something that we need to have, I think, in our adult life.
Yeah. I think sci-fi kind of messes that up after a while, because sci-fi, I always have this, whenever we go to conventions, because, you know, a lot of the horror and sci-fi conventions, they usually meld together in the same location.
Yeah.
Yes, they can double the attendance. And I'm always fascinating watching horror people versus sci-fi people. And I think the major difference that I found is sci-fi people need to be factual.
Yeah.
You can't write anything without going, well, prove it. How would that have happened? Whereas horror people are just like, your head fell off. That's it. You're done. We're done. We're just pure emotional. Blah, you're dead. Don't need to explain nothing.
That's very true. That's very emotional, you said. I think that's dead on.
So, which way do you tend to lean? I read your work, obviously. I know your work inside and out. When you approach it, do you dissect what you do and say, well, how would this logically happen? Or do you just let the shit fly?
Well, I do like to, like I said before, like develop patterns and systems and groups. And that's why I like creating new kinds of monsters and sort of dividing them up into classes and stuff. And I do create sort of a system of logic to explain how it's happening. But even then, to go along with that system of logic, you still have to be willing to accept completely unbelievable shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. That's one of the problems I think I have when... the biggest problem I have as a writer is I'm lazy. Not in writing, but I get lazy when I have to explain things in detail. You know, fuck it, he just walked through a wall, okay? Accept it.
Yeah.
You know. So I get I learned it from back in my comedy days. There was this horrible magician that we used to get booked with every once in a while, And I'll never forget, we were doing like a matinee, so there were some kids there, and he was doing these horrible tricks. And he was doing whatever this one trick was. I don't even remember what it was, but it was one of those old routines, you know, pouring the milk into the funnel or whatever it is and whatever. And he kind of lost his shit. And this one kid kept calling him out on everything, saying, saying, I know how you did that. I know how you did that. It's really behind your back. I know how you did that. It's in your shirt sleeve, you know, whatever. And he finally did some trick. And the kid goes, I know how you did that. You just put it behind your back and up your sleeve like this. And the guy leaned over and went, fuck you, it's magic. And I've just never forgot like that. That's how I approach, you know, I think more people should approach that with writing. Drives the sci-fi people up a wall. But when I just write, so I just go, you know, how am I going to explain that? Fuck you, it's magic. That's how it works.
Fuck. Absolutely.
But now you've been on a short story tear, like you've had a shitload the past couple of years. But even like this past year, you've had to knock out like somewhere like 8 to 10. That's almost like one a month. You know, short stories. Why don't you just take the cheap way out like a lot of us? And when are we going to see another short story collection?
That's a fantastic idea. Why didn't I think of that?
I'm your agent, baby. I work for you.
You magnificent bastard.
I think you've written so many short stories lately, you ought to put them in what we call in the business a collection. A short story collection. I would say anthology, but that's where the rookies fall into the trap. An anthology is when a bunch of people put short stories into one book. I'm thinking an all Dunwoody short story book. That would be a collection. You ought to do that.
Well, you know, I will think about that. I think there might be one or two folks out there that might be interested in taking a look at a proposal. So I will send one out a month ago.
Good. See, that's what I like about you, man. You're a go-getter. It's
That's how much you motivate me. I start moving back through time.
There you go. And you know how you do that? Not with a time machine. Through some dimensional warp. You do that because, fuck you, it's magic.
Magic.
That's how you do it. So so we might be seeing a Dunwoody short story collection again soon, huh?
I sure hope so, yeah.
This Chaluthertu Mythos writer sampler thing I saw on the internets?
This is a cool thing. David Conyers, who's a great author and editor, put together a bunch of short stories from folks, along with interviews. And you can download this to your Kindle for 99 cents. And it's basically a collection of Lovecraftian stories and the interviews touch upon that same stuff.
Do me a favor before you go any further. Mm-hmm. Before you go any further, I want to see if I'm correct. I want to play Know You're Dunwoody.
Okay.
Okay. I went through the table of contents, but the table of contents they had listed didn't say who wrote what.
Okay.
I have two guesses. Okay. I have two guesses. I bet you within these two guesses, I can name which story you wrote.
Okay.
All right. My first guess, because what it did is like just gave the title and then like a one sentence synopsis of what it was about.
Yeah.
My first guess is Cutter.
You got it.
Are you first shooting me? Guess.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
Because the other one was something like God's White Bed or something like that. I can't remember what the other one was. But as I put my money down on Cutter. I knew it. Do I know my Dunwoody or what? Was that really yours, or are you just making me feel good?
Nope, I absolutely did. It's actually a Harvest Cycle prequel story.
Ooh,
yeah,
very cool, very cool. So, wow, I'm going to brag to everybody. I'm going to call people I haven't talked to for like years, and call them up and just go, "Dude, I had done what on the cutter. I guessed it. All right, talk to you later," and I hang up. I'm going to do that all day tomorrow. So, you know what I always forget? This is embarrassing. And if you have had this happen, it won't make me feel so bad then. If not, then I'm the lone bastard. You know what I always forget that I was a part of, let alone you? Old School.
Old School.
That was awesome book. That was a damn good anthology.
Yeah.
That was, it's weird because, you know, when people, you know, you run to people all the time, they go, oh, you're a writer. What have you written? Whenever I list the things I've written, I always forget Old School. And when I my people were doing stuff and were writing down the list of all the things you've done, I was like, Old School. Well, I know that one. I remember that one. And then I thought, well, shit, I was in that one. So yeah. That, it's, do you ever forget that you did it? I mean, are there certain ones that, because you've done far more than I have. You're in like tons and tons and tons of collections of magazines. Do you ever sit back and go, oh, that's right, I was in that one?
No, you know, I don't, particularly with that one, because I think that was the same night I met your son when you invited me to be on that. So, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah. And by the way, again, I bring it up and whatever. And I don't mean to embarrass you, but that was one of the coolest things in the world, dude. You know, knowing how uncomfortable my son could be and overwhelmed how he could be. When you just sat down and talked with him in the middle of the convention and spent time one-on-one with him, you know, just, you know, dude, I'm autistic too. Come here, sit down, let's talk. That was like a life moment for him. That was so cool that, you know, this big, cool, older guy, because, you know, you're ancient to him. You know, you're an old dude.
Yeah.
But the fact that you sat and talked with him and stuff, that really influenced him. It was really cool. I couldn't give two shits, and it gave me time to run to the bar. So I thank you for that. But daddy's got to pound him. Yeah, you know what the coolest thing about a conversation? We were talking about Old School. So I remember pitching on Old School, asking if you'd be a part of it. And the premise of Old School is that we thought certain monsters, classic monsters, had been abused or forgotten. So we wanted to bring it back and write a story about an old monster, bring it back to the way it used to be. And I remember all you said to me was, I like pitch you on this whole thing. You're nodding. Then you look up and you just go, I get Creature of the Black Lagoon. I was like, yes. So you wrote that, and you wrote The Blob. I remember that one. I don't even remember which ones I wrote. I have no idea what I wrote, but I remember that you, because and you being Dunwoody, classic again. You write The Blob. Who else would have thought of to do this? You wrote The Blob story, first person through the perception of the Blob.
Well, you know, I figured. I mean. What have we not seen about the typical blob story? It comes down to eating people. They start shooting at it. So I thought, well, I don't know. What's it like for that poor blob? He's just hanging out.
Yeah. You're so sensitive to the need of blobs. Let's hear what he has to say. I didn't even know they could talk. At the very best, I thought it was like, remember, I don't know, you're probably too young to remember this. There was a show called The Herculoids. And it was a cartoon, one of those really bad. Who did the Scooby-Doo stuff?
Oh, like Hanna-Barbera?
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera. They wrote Herculoids were this caveman family. So he was a caveman. He drove a side triceratops with the three horns that shot like cannonballs out of its horns. And then they had a pterodactyl looking thing that shot laser beams out of its eyes. And he would fight, you know, ugly cavemen and ugly, you know, whatever monsters. But they had these two things called Gleep and Gloop.
Oh, yeah, okay, I remember this.
Yeah, and they would sound like, you know, like, you know, these weird noises and stretch all over the place. So that would be my only idea of what a blob would do. But you took it to the limit, man. So, hey, where can everyone find all things the Dunwoody?
If you go to daviddunwoody.com, that is your hub for more than you wanted to know.
It's that easy.
It is.
Can people find you on the Face Space or the Twitter? Do you do all that stuff? Or
oh, yeah. Yeah, and that stuff, yeah, it's all linked from the website. So you can stalk me and all that good stuff.
All right. So we got, hopefully, the Three Egos coming soon.
Yeah.
You heard it here, folks. He himself has said one of the coolest, most awesomest things he's ever written. So, and then we got, I just suggested the short story collection. So I'll
you did.
For that. And so much more to come up. I should mention that next week is our big Werepig finale. It's going to be it for 2000. hell is it? 2013, and then we're out until I'll see you guys the year after that, whatever that is. But we're going to have, before I go to my werepig slumber, Mr. Harry Shannon and his daughter Paige, an incredible singer, they're going to be here. I'm going to be like Andy Williams, like with the old Christmas show stuff, and they're going to be like my Osmond family. So I'm very excited about that. That's going to be next Friday night, party night, 9 Eastern Standard Time in the No Pant Zone. Dunwoody, the?
Yep.
First name, last name, first. So cool that you're with me, man. Again, I'll have you on 15 more times next year.
Always love being here, man. You're my hero.
So, we got to talk about that. You need help. So, all right, buddy. Check out DavidDunwoody.com. And simple Google search. Just put in the. It'll pull up all of his work. It's amazing. Get yourself Empire and Dark and Titties and Harvest Cycle and all that good stuff. So you guys have a great week. And we're going to turn you now over to Paranormal. Paranormal's the next show up to spook the hell out of you. And then we got NinaCon, all the docking you want and even more. So that's it for us, folks. We will see you next week. Friday night, party night in the No Pant Zone for the big Werepig finale. Good night, everybody.